At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Axis Mundi.
Welcome to One Nation Indivisible. I'm Andrew L. Seidel, a constitutional attorney and the author of The Founding Myth and American Crusade. This is a podcast about religion, the law, and the battle for America's soul. We'll be separating church and state, defending freedom and equality, and fighting Christian nationalism. If you haven't already, sign up for our weekly bonus content and ad-free listening at accessmundi.us. LFG, folks.
We've got a lot to cover, folks, but there is one issue that I want to spend a little bit of time on before we get to what is becoming a weekly wrap, and that is an attempt, again, to overturn marriage equality. After we walk through that and the Christian nationalist crusade to do so, we'll look at a little bit of a weekly recap, which will include some of Trump's most egregious grifting. The Smithsonian, the DHS citing scripture yet again, and then what I know you're all hearing about, the memo for federal workers that is going to bring even more Christianity into the federal government. The conservative movement and Christian nationalists excel at focusing on their goals to the exclusion of their differences. This may seem like a really strange statement, so I want to unpack it a little bit. And let's just think about a maybe obvious example that you're not considering when you hear that sentence come out of my mouth. Let's think about log cabin Republicans. The Republican Party may want to take away their right to marry, to love the people that they love, to exist as individuals, but they are still a part of that party. This hypothetical comes to me from an episode of West Wing, which I rewatched recently, where Josh Lyman has a friend who is in the Republican Party and a log cabin Republican and cannot understand how he can do this. But let's think about another example. Think about Catholic Christian nationalists. There is a solid section of the modern Christian nationalist movement in this country that is deeply Catholic. A section in power. And they are willing to advance these Christian nationalist aims. But that has not always been the case. In fact, one of the greatest fault lines that has run through American history, and really through all of world history, is the fault line between Protestants and Catholics. And this is especially true here in this country. At some point, I'm going to do a full episode on the Philadelphia Bible riots. Some of the first church-state cases that were ever brought in this country were brought by Catholics who didn't want Protestantism imposed on their children in the public schools. Think of the Edgerton Bible case from the late 1890s. One of the more famous examples. But the modern Christian nationalist movement is different, because Protestants and Catholics have set aside those theological differences in pursuit of political goals, similar political goals. They're willing to work with someone that they disagree with, you know, say 60% of the way, I'm making up a number, to get to a goal that they agree on, you know, almost 100% of the time. Abortion, overturning Roe versus Wade, right? This is a goal that they both agree on. And even though Protestants may think Catholics are going to hell and that the Pope is the Antichrist, all whatever, you know, all those crazy things, and maybe not Protestants, maybe evangelicals, right? And even though these are two sects that have been at each other's throats for centuries, they are willing to put all that aside in pursuit of these goals. And this is something that I think in the progressive movement and on the left and Democrats fail at. It's not just that we fail to form these alliances in pursuit of common political goals. It's obvious that we fail. And it's obvious to our opponents who take advantage of it. Because one thing that the Christian nationalist movement also excels at is driving wedges into our coalition. And, you know, at times I wonder if they even have to drive those wedges. They just have to point out that the wedge is there, and then we willingly pull these wedges deeper and deeper into our movement, focusing on each other and turning against our own organizations and friends and allies. You know, organizations and friends and allies that we agree with on almost everything except that one thing. So we're going to tear it down. You know, we agree on 95% of the way, but because we don't agree about that 5%, we can't work together, or I can't believe that you are a moral person and I've got to oppose you. You know, and the reason that I mentioned log cabin Republicans is that Christian nationalists are targeting marriage equality. One of the planks of the Republican platform for 2024 was that Republicans will promote a culture that values the sanctity of marriage, which is not so coded language, meaning marriage is between a man and a woman. And I know we've talked, this has been a theme of this podcast so far, which is coming up on, I think, about 6 months, about half a year. Devoted a whole episode to this issue with Brandon Wolf, but they're coming for marriage equality at the Supreme Court again. And that's why I wanted to use that hypothetical, because marriage equality is back or might be back at the Supreme Court. In late July, Liberty Counsel, which is the Christian nationalist legal outfit run by Matt Staver, one of the more zealous Christian nationalist ideologues out there, one of the more extreme ideologues out there, really on the forefront of the COVID litigation, has been litigating Kim Davis's case since 2015. Kim Davis, you'll remember, is the Kentucky bigot, the clerk in Rowan County, Kentucky, who refused to issue marriage licenses despite the fact that marriage equality was the law of the land, because she believed that her God, her holy book, told her that marriage is between a man and a woman, despite herself having been married multiple times and having, let's just say, less than an obvious respect for the sanctity of marriage that appeared in the GOP platform. That case is still happening. And again, I know I've said this on the pod, but it bears repeating. The Christian nationalist movement is so fucking good at dragging these cases out forever and ever and ever. Remember the case that I talked about that Kavanaugh has been involved in, the Santa Fe versus Doe case from 2000. And now First Liberty Institute is trying to overturn that case in the Cambridge Christian School case that they are asking the Supreme Court to take up. Right. Also, that case has been going on since 2015, for a decade. The Coach Kennedy case was going on for 8 years. Another First Liberty case. This Kim Davis case has been going on since 2015. And now, Liberty Counsel is again asking the Supreme Court to take up this issue, Kim Davis's case, and overturn Obergefell. But Liberty Counsel is actually asking for a lot more than that. So remember, when a group a person, a plaintiff, a party, wants the Supreme Court to take up the case, they have to ask the court to take it. There's very few cases in which the Supreme Court has what's called original jurisdiction, which means that the Supreme Court has to take that case. Okay? Most of the cases that the Supreme Court takes up are cases the Supreme Court agrees to take. And to convince the court of that, you have to file what's called a petition of certiorari. We call it a cert petition. Cert is the shorthand. Cert is short for certiorari. And that is a tongue twister. Good luck saying it. Try it. And in that petition for cert, you have to explain to the court why this case is important, why the court should waste its time on this particular case. And nearly all the cases are rejected. Court only hears less than 100 cases each year, gets thousands of cert petitions. And one of the things you do at the beginning is you present your questions. These are the questions that the case presents, that these are the legal questions that the court would end up deciding. And the third legal question presented, according to Liberty Counsel's cert petition, is, quote, whether Obergefell v. Hodges and the legal fiction of substantive due process should be overturned. And wow, did they sneak that in there. It's not just marriage equality that they're coming for, but and the legal fiction of substantive due process. So this is directed at Justice Thomas and his extremism and hoping that some of the other justices will jump on that train. So it's not just marriage equality. It's all of substantive due process. And we've talked about that on the podcast before. Substantive due process are those rights that you have that are maybe not explicit or enumerated in the Constitution. So, for instance, you have the right to marry somebody of a different race because of a case called Loving versus Virginia, which was 1967, which is based on substantive due process, though also a little bit equal protection. This is Obergefell v. Hodges based in this same thing. Skinner versus Oklahoma, you have the right to have children. Accessing contraception. Accessing abortion, these were things that also kind of fell under this regime of substantive due process, which is a reason that it has been so targeted by conservative activists and Christian nationalists like Liberty Counsel. And in this petition, Liberty Counsel argues that Obergefell was wrong when it was decided, and it is wrong today because it was grounded entirely on the legal fiction of substantive due process. That's what they're arguing. I mean, this would upend our understanding of individual rights, which is what they're going for. And it would also, as a byproduct, given the way that the Supreme Court has weaponized the right to religious freedom for conservative Christians, not for anybody else, it's going to elevate that right even further. Because one of the things that I explain in American Crusade that the Supreme Court is doing, it is essentially creating a hierarchy of rights. Where the right to exercise your religion, if you are a conservative Christian, is more important than other rights that we possess. Right? I mean, according to the conservative justices on this Supreme Court, things like the Second Amendment right to own any kind of fucking gun you want, the right to exercise your religion no matter what it does to other people, no matter how it harms other people, and maybe some property rights, the rights to manipulate elections if you're a Republican, those rights fall at the top of a pyramid of rights, and other rights fall down below it. Women's right to bodily autonomy would fall below that, for instance. And this would further help create that stratification, that pyramid of rights. Another way to think about it is, again, for the last decade, the Supreme Court has been weaponizing religious freedom. And again, I'll never stop saying this, but religious freedom is not, nor has it ever been, nor should it ever be, a license to violate, infringe, ignore, or impinge the rights of other people.
Finding great candidates to hire can be like, well, trying to find a needle in a haystack. Sure, you can post your job to some job board, but then all you can do is hope the right person comes along. Which is why you should try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its powerful technology identifies people with the right experience and actively invites them to apply to your job. You get qualified candidates fast. So while other companies might deliver a lot of hay, ZipRecruiter finds you what you're looking for. The needle in the haystack.
See why 4 out of 5 employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free, at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. That's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
But now, religious freedom and, you know, right to bear arms, those other rights that we were talking about, is kind of this super right that's not possessed by everybody, but it's this right that belongs to conservative Christians and can be wielded against non-Christians and LGBTQ folk. And that's what the Kim Davis case exemplifies, the perversion of this hallowed right. And it's been going on for a decade. It's important to note, too, that this is a complete misreading of the entire conflict, because Kim Davis's religious freedom was not actually impacted in any way. When a county clerk issues a marriage license to anyone, it has nothing to do with the personal religious belief of somebody who happens to occupy that office. Instead, Kim Davis was always arguing that she had a right to abuse the power that is attached to a government office to impose her personal religious beliefs on citizens with no regard for their rights. Or, to put it another way, Davis and Liberty Counsel are arguing that the right of a couple to marry is subservient to her religious freedom rights. And the thing that scares me is that I look at this Supreme Court and how little it cares for precedent, how little it cares for procedure, how willing it is to elevate the religious beliefs of Christian above the rights of other people, and what these particular individual justices have said and the way they have talked about marriage equality in the past. And I worry that Liberty Counsel has the votes to get this done. You know, again, if you want a more calming understanding of this, please go back and listen to the episode with Brandon Wolf from Human Rights Campaign, which talks about this possibility in perhaps more realistic terms. But I am worried. You know, Liberty Counsel's founder, you know, again, lead zealot Matt Staver, has talked about how in the 2015 Obergefell decision, John Roberts filed this, what Staver calls a strong dissent in the case, along with Thomas and Alito. And those three are still on the court. In fact, strong dissent kind of undersells things a little bit, because, again, the only time John Roberts has ever read any of his dissent from the bench was in his Obergefell dissent. You've heard the audio on this podcast before. And when I look at this packed, partisan, broken Supreme Court, I see a threat to our basic human rights. I see an institution that has been captured. I see a group of ideologues that is eager to throw out decades of settled law with cursory shadow docket decisions and opinions, as we decided, or as we explored last week. And again, if you do the whip count, if you do a head count, I see 6 members who would be willing to do this. Barrett, Kavanaugh, Gorsuch, and as we just said, Alito, Thomas, and Roberts. These are the six judges of the American apocalypse who have already gutted reproductive rights. They've completely rewritten religious freedom and church-state separation as Christian privilege. They're abusing the shadow docket to aid the Republican Party. I think they're coming for contraception. I still think that's on the chopping block. And I worry that marriage equality could be too. Again, the evidence is there. Justice Kennedy was the swing vote in Obergefell, and the court is just vastly different now. Right? He was replaced by Kavanaugh, who's credibly accused of sexual assault and who has been threatening political retributions. We talked about how then-Senator Kamala Harris asked Kavanaugh his opinion on Obergefell, and he basically refused to answer. Now Barrett has replaced Ruth Bader Ginsburg, another shift in the wrong direction. Gorsuch, you know, maybe they don't need Gorsuch to win this, to do this. And I know a lot of people think that his decision in Bostock is a good decision. It is. But there's a religious freedom exception yawning right there. And they've got some powerful movers and shakers in the Christian nationalist movement, not just Liberty Council, who are behind this. So it may not be the Liberty Council case that is the one that undoes substantive due process and maybe doesn't undo Obergefell. But it could be. And what could this look like? What would it look like if the Supreme Court did overturn marriage equality? I mean, there's this idea that it would just end up looking like Roe, where it falls and then it returns to the equal marriage for all falls, and it returns to the states, and states are allowed to have marriage equality or not. And then you get states chipping away at marriage equality. You know, the court might grant bigoted clerks like Davis the freedom to refuse marriage licenses, and other professionals a religious freedom right not to serve gay couples. One of the counter-arguments that I often hear, and again, I've addressed this on the pod before, but it's worth talking about again, is that even if this court were to overturn Obergefell, it would not be possible from an administrative standpoint to untangle the web of rights, whether we're talking about financial rights, estate planning, taxes, insurance, property, parental rights, and so many more that we weave into marriage. We often, in the law, we talk about property ownership as a bundle of rights. This is a metaphor that law professors love to use, but similar can be said of marriage. It's a bundle of rights that the state gives to you, benefits as well that the state gives to you. But if the court wants to play Thanos with marriage equality and snap its fingers and obliterate the estimated 1.5 million same-sex marriage, it would create utter chaos. And it would. I mean, I agree that it would. It would be a nightmare. My fear is that they don't care. Because the burden of that Thanos-like chaos is going to fall on LGBTQ people. And to a lesser extent, on local and state government officials. And we have seen from this administration and from this court that the cruelty is the point, and the cruelty is often upheld. So dumping just a nightmare of administrative burdens onto LGBTQ people while robbing them of their equality might be an enticement. It's also possible that they could just do this prospectively so that that doesn't happen, just moving forward. Though I'm sure there would be I'm sure the other side would envision a way to challenge that. Again, look, I want to be wrong about all this, but the other side is not giving up attempting to bring this case to the Supreme Court, attempting to overturn Obergefell. And part of the reason for that is because they have done the same counting that I have. They know what the whip count on the Supreme Court is for marriage equality. That's why they're so eager to get a case before the Supreme Court. They're just looking for the right vehicle. And hopefully the Kim Davis case is not the right vehicle, because it's still a bit of a nightmare. And if you noticed that I was talking about the third question presented in that case, not the first or the second, which are more complicated given the long procedural history of that case. So maybe it's not this case. Hopefully it's not this case. Maybe it's something entirely different. But I do worry that they're coming for it. And I worry that they're not going to stop until they're successful, or until we can stop them, until we can fix the court, recapture the court, unfuck the court, and give them a reason to stop trying. So let's wrap up with a few other issues. Trump plans to build a $200 million gold ballroom, maybe with our tax dollars, maybe with some sort of grifting scheme that would allow people to effectively bribe him without bribing him, all while he is, of course, gutting NPR and PBS and the arts. He's going to forgive the student loans for anyone who joins the ICE Gestapo, but screw people with student loans working for the public good. And we know that the worst people you knew in high school are going to be desperate to apply for those jobs. And these are going to be his brown shirts. Trump has hollowed out TSA and the other agencies that keep us safe, but is going to steal $1 billion of our hard-earned taxpayer money to refurbish a free, air quotes, Qatari plane that he's going to keep for himself. He is a grifter. It's a grift all the way down. And if you are a believer, Trump is using you and the political cover your God gives to fleece all of us. He's using your savior, Jesus, as a human shield. And if you're a Christian nationalist, you are aiding and abetting him. None of this should fly. But because you have made his position unassailable and allowed him to abuse your religion in that way, he's getting away with it. He's not just getting away with robbing us and enriching himself. Never mind all these goddamn golf trips. Trump is also rewriting history. We've talked about how his regime is soliciting snitches to rat out displays at national parks, national monuments, and other historic sites, putting up these QR codes that people can scan and then say, "This display says something that made me feel sad as a straight white man," right? Anything that might make a straight white Christian man feel less than superior is on the chopping block. But Trump is also rewriting his own story. And this is truly alarming, because we're talking recent history here that Trump is working to rewrite. And when I saw this Washington Post story, I didn't believe it at first. And the headline made me gag. And it turns out it is true, to the extent that I've been able to verify. The Washington Post headline reads, "Smithsonian removes Trump from impeachment exhibit in American History Museum." And the kicker is, the Smithsonian said it restored the display to an earlier version, which notes that, quote, "only three presidents have seriously faced removal, not Donald Trump." The Smithsonian, folks, is rewriting history. And this is just straight out of the authoritarian playbook. I mean, literally 1984 is what we're talking about. And this is one of the reasons I'm so focused on history when I talk about the modern Christian nationalist movement. Who controls the past controls the present. This one is alarming. It really is. DHS is citing scripture again, the second time. They've got another one of these ridiculous ads out. It shows helicopters and night vision and guns. And it is a ridiculous caricature. And it quotes Proverbs 28, verse 1. "The wicked flee when no man pursueth, but the righteous are bold as a lion." Again, this Brad covered the first time this happened on Straight White American Jesus. But, you know, for me, it's whenever somebody quotes the Bible to me, or I see a Bible quote, especially a politician or government doing it, I always got to go read the whole chapter. Because they often don't know what they're doing. Now, Proverbs is a little bit different because Proverbs, like, it's kind of like Proverbs, you know, you get these sort of nuggets of wisdom that can stand alone. But, you know, some of the other verses in particular, they're always taking them and it's taking them out of a story that when you read the whole story, not only is it out of context, but the story's like, whoa, maybe you shouldn't be actually quoting from that politician. Anyway, the 28th chapter of Proverbs, from which this quote comes, is full of sort of these antithetical couplets, you know, poor versus rich, good versus wicked, etc., things like that. And it seems to me that this regime, the Trump regime, would have been far better off thinking about some of the other verses in the 28th chapter of the book of Proverbs, such as verse 3, which says, "A poor person who oppresses the poor is a beating rain that leaves no food." Or verse 6, which says, "It's better to be poor and walk in integrity than to be crooked in one's ways, even though rich." I mean, hello, Donald Trump? Or verse 16, "A ruler who lacks understanding is a cruel oppressor, but one who hates unjust gain will enjoy a long life." Or verse 27, "Whoever gives to the poor will lack nothing, but one who turns a blind eye will get many a curse." Now, don't get me wrong. I am an atheist, and I do not think the Bible is a good guide for much of anything. And the reason I'm quoting it here is because they are not using it as a guide. The DHS is not using it as a guide. The Trump regime is not using it as a guide. They are using it as a justification to harm people and to get people excited about harming people, to get people to sign up to harm people. That's what they're doing here. Okay, lastly, let's talk for a moment about the U.S. Office of Personnel Management memo that you saw in the news that is going to bring more religion into the federal workplace. So this is a memo that was sent by Scott Kapoor, K-U-P-O-R, who is the director of OPM, the Office of Personnel Management, to July 28th, I believe, and it's entitled "Protecting Religious Expression in the Federal Workplace." Now, there's been some good reporting on this. I'm sure you've heard about it already. I want to say a few things. I want to try to expand on what you have heard. First, there was already a memo that was pretty similar to this, and this may not be all that different from the earlier 1997 memo, which was problematic for several reasons. It's not exactly the same, but it's not all that different. There are a couple things that are different, but in the memo itself, but I think it's the bigger context in which the memo was issued that is something we ought to spend a little bit more time on. Because one of the major differences is the climate that we are in. 1997 and 2025 are very different. 2025, we are in the middle of a wave of Christian nationalism that is crashing down upon this country. And it's in that climate, we are also seeing other memos issued by the Trump regime. And these two things build on one another. And the word that comes to mind that I've used to explain this quite a bit over the past few years, and in fact, I had two different interviews with foreign press today, earlier today when I was at work, on opposite corners of the world, and I use this word with both of those outlets, is emboldened. And the Christian nationalist movement in this country is emboldened. And this is especially true of the Christian nationalists who are in the federal government, who are working directly under the Trump regime, because of a number of different things. Donald Trump has purged the government of a lot of the non-political employees, the career federal government employees who make the trains run on time, who keep us safe, who do all of the things that we want our federal government to do, but nobody wants to pay for in this country. He's purged a lot of those people out of the government, these career professionals who make sure that agencies are nonpartisan. He's put in place and worked to hire, this was one of the big things that Project 2025 was tasked with doing, ideologues and Christian nationalist zealots to replace those career professionals and to take positions at higher levels. And then he has issued a number of executive orders. Right? Let's leave this memo aside for a moment. Let's think about his order on the Anti-Christian Bias Task Force, which is a joint task force of many task forces where each agency is supposed to have its own anti-Christian bias task force housed within it. So, for instance, at the Department of Veterans Affairs, they're going to have their own. Department of State is going to have its own anti-Christian bias task force. And all of these things taken together lead to the emboldening of the Christian nationalist movement, and they're emboldening each other. And I think we have to think about this memo in the context of that climate and in the context of all of the other executive orders that are happening, but especially the anti-Christian bias order. Because even though this is not terribly different from some of from the 1997 memo, and again, I'm not saying it's not problematic, it is. When taken in conjunction and put in this climate and seeing the emboldening of the Christian nationalist movement right now, it does have a much different feel to it. And let me just read one hypothetical example that they use in the memo. Quote, "During a break, an employee may engage another in polite discussion of why his faith is correct and why the non-adherent should rethink his religious beliefs. However, if the non-adherent requests such attempts to stop, the employee should honor their request." Think about how that's actually going to play out. First of all, there's also examples that say supervisors can now do this on employees who are underneath them, which is something that is different from 97 and is more problematic. And it says that government officials can do this with non-government people. And one of the examples that we've seen is, you know, like a park ranger can start proselytizing a tour group, which is, no, you can't. And if that happens, let me know. So just think about how this is going to happen. Let's just forget about the supervisor, forget about the park ranger example. And let's just think about one employee going to another. Let's think about a Christian employee, an evangelical employee, let's say, because we know that's why they're writing this, talking to an atheist like myself. "Andrew, you should really rethink your religious beliefs because you're going to burn in hell. Hi, I'm going to need you to go ahead and stop, because you telling me I'm going to burn in hell, that I should be tortured for all eternity, is harassment. I don't want to hear about it." Perfectly reasonable for me to say that. I think relatively polite given what I'm being told. What's going to happen? Because that evangelical employee is going to turn around and go to the anti-Christian bias task force in whatever agency we are a part of. And they're going to report me for, one, not listening to them, two, telling them to stop proselytizing, and three, maybe saying something mean about the idea of hell, which is absolutely repugnant and immoral. That's why this memo is so different from 97, because of the milieu that it is injected into. Because now there are all of these other weapons at the disposal of the Christians and the Christian nationalists who want to make the federal government an arm of the Christian church, who want to inject religion into the workplace, who want to eject non-Christians from the workplace. And there are, you know, I didn't mention all of the executive orders and the memos. For instance, we saw another memo that allows Christians, you know, more leeway when it comes to remote work and other things like that that's been passed down. This is a real problem, and it's going to be a real problem. And this is going to have lasting impact on the federal workforce. And is another thing that the recovery president, because we're going to have big, big recovery to do after this, is going to have to deal with. The federal government has been hollowed out, and what's going to be left is a skeleton of Christian nationalists. And they're not going to be able to go in and fire them because they are Christian, because they have a right to be Christian. It's going to be a problem, folks. So this is problematic. This is deeply troubling. This is what we get under a Christian nationalist regime. If you are watching this clip and are curious, the shirt is from Bitter Southerner, and it says, "Bring on the matriarchy." Bitter Southerner has the best gear. They are not paying me to say that. I wish they would. I wish they would sponsor the pod. I mean, I love all their stuff. I fly the Bitter Southerner flags. The magazine's fantastic. And the Bring on the Matriarchy shirt. This is the second one of these I've had. I don't know what happened to the first one. But I'm ready for it. Because the near 50 men who have done... held the presidency so far have, I guess, 50 presidents, I should say, near 50 presidents. It's time. I mean, could you fuck this up anymore? Okay. We're obviously done. I'm done. Thanks, y'all.
This has been One Nation Indivisible. I'm Andrew Seidel. Until next time.
Finding great candidates to hire can be like, well, trying to find a needle in a haystack. Sure, you can post your job to some job board, but then all you can do is hope the right person comes along. Which is why you should try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its powerful technology identifies people with the right experience and actively invites them to apply to your job. You get qualified candidates fast. So while other companies might deliver a lot of hay, ZipRecruiter finds you what you're looking for. The needle in the haystack.
See why 4 out of 5 employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free. At ZipRecruiter.com/zip. That's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.